everyone. This is the Dope Science Show, and I am Tensie J. Taylor. Excited to be a guest.
Hey, this is Richard Wright, your local rap artist from Los Angeles, and I am here on the Dope Science Show talking about science and music and other cool things.
My name is One Cool Blurred, or Dr. Paul McNeil, and I'm on the Dope Science Show, where we talk about changing the narrative and making science dope for people of color.
Okay, this is Dave Beck, and I've been on a Dope Science Show with the dopest girl I ever known in my life, Ben Diego. And her name is, say it again,
Science Stuff with Steph.
Science Stuff with Steph. That's right. She's a great lady, guys. I hope you tune into her show.
My name's Damien Swaby, and I'm here on the Dope Science Show, the best podcast out there today.
Hey there, everybody. This is Maya Anika, visual artist and mental health advocate and speaker of the Spectrum blog, here with Stephanie at the Dope Science Show, and you should be here too. Go Steam!
Yeah! Hey, what's up, fellow people? What's up? My name is Natasha Wallison, and you just heard me on the Dope Science Show. Have a good day, y'all.
Awesome. Hello, welcome to the Dope Science Show with Stephanie Lowe, a.k.a. Science Steph with Steph. Thank you for your ears and minds. I hope that the show sparks new ideas, new opportunities, and conversations. I want us to learn and grow. We are all curious, innovative, and experimental in our daily lives. We are all dope scientists. Today's show features a conversation I shared with Jeffrey Wilson. Jeffrey is a senior analyst and writer at PC Magazine. He has appeared on TV, tech and con panels, and podcasts to discuss the intersection of tech and culture. He is a mentor to many in Brooklyn, an all-around cool guy you should want to know. So I was super excited to share a conversation with him. We discuss how his first grade teacher introduced him to science, media representation of scientists, my feelings about the film Hidden Figures, and then he educates me about the new Nintendo game console, Nintendo Switch. It was fun times. I hope you guys enjoy the show. Let's get started.
Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Dope Science Show. I'm so happy to have your ears today. I want to share a dope conversation that I'm having with my new friend, Jeffrey L. Wilson. He's a senior editor at PC Magazine, and he's also he's a real geek. I think he's knows everything about comic books, just all the new tech things, the latest, what's hot, what's happening, and I need someone like that to talk to because I'm a little bit delayed. I tend to be a bit delayed. So.
Oh, that's fine. I'm actually very happy. Very happy to be here and share some of my geekdom with your audience.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And you were mentioning that you found me on some blurred rabbit hole.
Yeah, I was up late really one night, bored and on the internet as usual. And I saw a page about black comic book characters. And the page had a hashtag, blurreds. So I clicked that, fell down the blurreds rabbit hole. And I discovered your page because it had the word science in the title. And I'm a long time science head. Used to watch the original Cosmos when I was a kid and watched the new one with Neil deGrasse Tyson. So yeah, your videos were of much interest to me.
Yay. I'm glad that I spoke to you. That's what I try to do. And it's as you see, the videos are not super polished. They're not I'm some science genius, but I'm excited about science. And, I just want people to talk about it and think about it and so that we can have that become just a more everyday conversation,
And that's very important because one of the roadblocks for having, one of the many roadblocks of having science kind of penetrate the masses is the lack of visible faces and personalities. If you were to ask the average person, can you name three scientists? You'll probably get Neil deGrasse Tyson, Bill Nye, and maybe that's it. We don't have enough people who can speak in everyday language to the people.
It's true. I just recently did an interview, and they asked me, so what black scientists, not that and you know, they wanted to know what black scientists I could think of. And I was like, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Right.
I was like, Nutty Professor.
So true.
And then I went to Google. I'm like, Google, please tell me. And I'm actually interested in science, and I still don't have a list of names that I can list off the top of my head. And they're out there. And the thing is, it's more like we need something that, or someone who curates, you know, some all this information. Because I just saw Hidden mm-hmm. Figures. And, mm-hmm. and have you seen Hidden Figures?
Not yet.
Oh, you have to see it. It's so good. It's so good. It's definitely a feel-good movie. Anyone from all ages would love it, just if you can have the perfect, like, you know, all-age, all-culture movie, it was it. And one of the takeaways I would say was I was super amazed that these women were so pivotal. You know, they were the key, like, super key components of how we made it to space and Mars. Right. Like, if these women weren't there, we may not have done it at that time. Like, it was that crucial. And for them to have been that crucial, and I had never heard of them, I was like, wow. It was just, that was the huge, like, takeaway for me. Like, that was amazing that I didn't know about them.
Yeah, I think one of the issues here with when it comes to so people who are scientists who are really making these world-altering discoveries, they're in the lab. They're constantly hours face down, you know, doing calculations. So they don't usually have the time, or people don't know about them enough to book them for, you know, The Daily Show or for Bill Maher. These are all the great, you know, the great minds who help push things forward. And, you know, they're in the headquarters, you know, making things happen instead of being, you know, more visible people.
Right. They need PR. You know, they need need their own marketing team. That's what I think is brilliant about Neil deGrasse Tyson and Bill Nye and just these people who are becoming celebrities who are scientists is we need them. You might think, you know, you might have the impression that if they're becoming showbiz that they're not real scientists but the whole point of science is to share information so that we can build upon it and experiment and come to new conclusions, you know?
Right.
So it needs to be in a wider sphere. You know, we need a greater audience so we can have more minds that come together for innovation. So that's what we need. And that's what I'm trying to do. And that's why I'm so happy you're on the show to talk about, like, why were you into science? Like, how did you even, as a kid, how did that even come to your interest level? Do you remember, like, who introduced you or what influenced you?
Yes, it was a first grade teacher in Brooklyn named Mrs. Harris. And it wasn't even exactly a science class that got me to get interested in science. She was this very nice woman who lived in Brooklyn, and she was very big on the idea that people should grow their own food. So during the semester, we would have to bring in our own fruit seeds and grow them in the class. So my natural curiosity was like, how does a seed become an alfalfa sprout or some other vegetable? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I would spend weekends in the library, face down in books, and, you know, it went from, you know, growing vegetables to, you know, learning about the planets, learning about more mainstream consumer electronics. So from that small little seed that she planted, you know, helped push forward my love for science.
That's amazing. I remember that. I remember something similar occurred to me where, you know, you get the little seed in the little pixie cup in the dirt and you're just like watering it, and you're amazed. I'm still like that now. Like, I'm still amazed. Anytime I grow something, like, wow. And then when you find out if you take the time to go down the rabbit hole and find out, oh, wow, so photogenesis, you know, and this is, like, you know, sucrose and all the different, you know, chemicals and biological processes that have to take place in order to germinate a seed.
Right, and the importance of pollination. And I was just reading the other day about how bumblebees are almost completely wiped out.
I know. Like, it's so sad. And
that one segment of the bee population may be gone, you know, within our lifetimes, unless, you know, we take action to preserve them, the land, and ourselves.
And we can't do it without bees. Like, what I don't get, people are just like, yeah, they're endangered. Oh, that's so sad. Like, it's so removed from reality. I'm like, you, what you don't realize, or you're somehow it's getting lost in translation, is they go extinct, you go extinct, or you become completely dependent on some manufacturer to create food for you.
Right.
You know, you're going to have to come up with some genius ideas on how to do alternative pollination. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a travesty. You know?
It really is, and it still surprises me that there are still people who do not want to recognize the impact that we're having, because it would cause, because changing our impact on the rest of the world would mean a change to our everyday lives, and there are a lot of people who just don't want to do that, just willfully, just want to live their lives and don't care about what's happening to the rest of the world, and that's unfortunate.
I know. It's unfortunate and unloving. That's really? What I'm starting mm-hmm. to come to the conclusion mm-hmm. that a lot of things that end with, well, you know, and then there's this pause, and it's like the pause is you don't love those people. You don't care about people dying. that's what this, you know, this pregnant silence is, you know, like, okay, mm-hmm. well.
it's very true. And I think the potential upside here is that I don't know any of your political leanings, but mm-hmm. I think what's happened in the last few months with this Trump election, those who were more left-leaning, they seem to be more active now in wanting to change our world, because they see what's coming, what's happening.
Right.
The left has always been a bit more progressive in making these changes, but now it's a true fire under their asses to, like, let's do this.
Exactly. Because a lot of times, you know, it's unfortunate, but we have to be pushed. Usually people, what do they do? The 80% of the time they're chilling, 20% of the time is the fire.
Right.
You know, and that's just how the majority of us are. They have action once they have no other choice but to act, you know?
That's true. That's very true.
Funny.
So you mentioned, on a lighter note, that's outside of our dystopia future.
No bees, no more honey, no more plants.
So sad, because I love kiwi, and I don't know how I would get kiwis without bees. But you mentioned something about Nintendo Switch, or does that? Maybe I need to Google this. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Nintendo Switch. It's Nintendo's latest. It's. I was going to say a console, but technically it's a hybrid system. It's the. It's their next generation console, but it's also a hybrid handheld. So it replaces the Wii U and the 3DS. The whole gimmick around it is that it's about a roughly 7-inch tablet that you can play full console games on, but then you can come home and dock it and play it on your big screen TV. So you have the best of both worlds, some console gaming when you're home and some mobile portable gaming when you're out on the road.
It's going to be amazing. Everybody's going to get rid of all the old stuff. Oh, it's cheap too.
Yeah, it's $300 and it comes out, I believe, March 3rd. All the pre-orders that were available almost instantly sold out. But, you know, that's a little bit of spin because Nintendo always gives very low pre-orders to create that artificial hype.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it seems to be very divisive right now. A lot of people are saying, "Oh, it's not really a console because it's portable and maybe underpowered." But on the other hand, you know, people like me, I'm not a super hardcore gamer, and I like the idea of being able to play when I'm commuting or standing in right. line buying stamps or something, you know.
Or for parties or events, you know.
Yes, that's the one thing that's kind of missing from contemporary gaming is that so much of it is, you know, let's play Call of Duty and I'm going to shoot you online. What about what about the personal experience of, like, you know, being in person and, you know,
and shooting them in person and then you can laugh in their face.
Right. Exactly.
You know, make it I think I'd be more into, I would love going to a party. Games are great at parties, you know, and I've never been to a party where people were, like, playing video games, maybe because I'm not a gamer, but I can imagine, like, hey, like, maybe teams or something like that. I don't know. Gamers listening, this might already be happening, but I think it would be a good application for it.
Yes, Nintendo is one of maybe the only real console maker who still believes in the idea of let's get people together physically in a room and have a good time together. Because the Switch has two controllers that sit on the side of the tablet, and you can pop them off. They're called Joy-Cons, and they act in a similar fashion as the Wii U wand. So you may be able to play those motion control baseball games and tennis games like you did on the original Wii console.
Oh, that would be awesome. I liked Wii. I didn't realize that. I just didn't realize that. That sounds really cool. My daughter's into video games. I don't let her have them, though. But I was like, maybe I should. We had the Wii. We did have that for a while. Go ahead.
If you're a Wii fan, you should take a good look at the Nintendo Switch because it has quite a bit of its elements baked into its system.
Yeah, I will definitely do that. I'm not going to tell her, but that's a good... Because then she'll start bugging me for it, like, yeah, let's do that. But it has a good price point.
Mm-hmm. It's $300. It comes with two Joy-Con controllers. No game. You have to buy a game separately. And it's only roughly 4 to 5 games at start. Things will slowly roll out over the course of the spring and summer. But it has potential. I haven't owned a Nintendo console since the N64 back in 1997 or so. So I'm all in. I already pre-ordered. I'm ready to rock.
What else do you have pre-ordered? I want to get those Snapchat glasses.
We have them in the office. I haven't tried them yet because can I admit something to you? Can I share a secret?
Yes.
I'm 42 years old, and I'm beginning to feel like I'm approaching that area where you don't understand certain youth things anymore.
Oh. And
when someone tried to explain Snapchat to me, my mind just couldn't wrap around it. So I should, considering my job.
You should. But the thing, or what you do is you go, what you do is you admit that you're old. Just kidding.
Yeah.
but you hang out with young people and let them translate it to you. And then you get to be like, oh, okay. But you don't have to be, you don't have to pretend that you're like in the know, because you're like, you know what? I'm older, and it's all right, and you guys are young, so young people tell me what you're doing. Like, I don't use Snapchat. People my age do, and younger people do. I just never fell in love with it, but I do think I would like it if I had the glasses, because I'm always into, like, making videos and, like, having, like, already. Like, I like and think about that on a daily basis. And that just seems really convenient. Like, that's really going to make video even more user-friendly and just, like, super easy to do, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I have – I also mentor. A couple of times a year, I have mentors from – mentees from Brooklyn College. And so they're teens and early 20s, so – you know, they introduce me to new things. Yeah, they tell me about, oh, you got to hear, like, you know, MC Yachty and you know, music and apps and things. So I have a small ear to the street.
Good, good. And I think that's the key to staying young forever at heart. You just keep hanging out with, like, young people, you know? You keep getting that young juice.
like the, what's that story about the scientist who replaced the aging rat's blood with the blood of a younger rat, and suddenly the older rat suddenly had a new set of, like, passion for life?
I don't know that story, but I just saw something online, and I'm not sure if it's real. They're like, there's a startup that will replace your blood with young people blood. I didn't click the link, but I guess people were thinking about it. I was like, I'm going to go down that rabbit hole another time.
It's funny you mentioned that, because a friend told me a similar thing about a week or so ago, and we were trying to figure out if, in retrospect, the whole vampire mythos, which, you know, usually comes off as very sensual and sexual with, you mm-hmm. know, someone attacking your neck and a creature of the night, if it really is also about, you know, someone who's old, who's been around for centuries, just draining the youth out of someone to keep that person alive. And, you know, did those people at that time who, you know, created these ideas have a sense that the life truly is in the blood somewhere?
I'm going to speculate that there was some mystical science that was going on. And if we go and review our ancient alien archives, I'm sure
yeah.
there's some explanation for that. Like, they were already doing it, we just forgot, and now we're coming back to it. Yeah, something mm-hmm. like that. But it's kind of like elementary thinking, you know? It's not like far-fetched thought. And in a way, with the way we can manipulate, like, DNA and create cells of any type, it's not far-fetched at all. I just need to look a little bit further, like, so is the startup really doing it? What's the science behind that? And, you know, and what are the ethics behind it? Like, so we already sell our blood. Is it any different than selling your blood? You know?
That's a good point. That's a very good point. There's going to be a lot of questions moving forward in the next few years. You know, science is really changing, has a potential to change our everyday, especially now. And it's going to be lots of ethical talk about, you know selling blood, cloning even more so in the future, GMOs. So this combination of this biology and science and corporate money is all going to come to the head very soon.
I know. And if only we would just live by the motto, do no harm. You know,
do
like
no
if everything
harm.
If everything could be like, does it do harm? You know, if we could just, if it was something like that, but it gets so gray because people are like, well, how much harm and how much money can we balance against that harm to make it suitable?
You know? Right.
And I'm like, oh, the whole non-loving, we need to be loving. Then it would be easier. But hey, there are good people out there with good intentions, and there's always, you know, those hackers out there who are like, hey, we're going to do it separate from money. You know, we're just going to do it. So what are you going to do? You know, it's just, what is it called? Pandora's box? You know, you open it. Is that what it's called? I want to say Panera Bread or
Panera
or
Bread. The tastier version of Pandora's box.
Well, it's because I'm dyslexic, so like other things will come to mind when I'm trying to think of the correct term.
Okay.
But I did want to mention, you said you met Neil deGrasse Tyson.
I did. He came to the office. We have a weekly show where we interview someone who's a scientist or, you know, a person who's has an interesting startup.
And what's your show called?
That show, I believe, is called Fast Forward, I believe. It's on, you can check it out on PC Magazine's Facebook page. And Neil came down and he has a new book out. So he's on doing the whole book tour thing. And he's here in New York. He's maybe a 20-minute train ride away at the planetarium. And he came by, discussed his new books, his ideas on the multiverse, his favorite Star Trek captains. So we kind of ran the gamut with NDT.
Oh, man, that's awesome. I didn't know he had a new book coming out.
It's probably on the stands right now.
I'm going to do better about reading books. I'm starting a book club. It's going to be the Dope Science Show Book Club.
Because
I need a read. And I was like, then I can talk to people about what we read, and we'll read about science.
But wait a minute. That's something interesting I see a lot of people say. They say that I don't need to read enough. But how do you do lots of videos without reading things?
I read a lot. I read...
see, there you go.
Well, I meant I don't read books.
Oh, actual books. Okay.
Yeah, I read research articles almost daily just because I like to. And that's where I get my sources from. But I don't read books. And I was a bookworm when I was a kid. And when I talk to people further about just science videos or science, the deeper knowledge of the subject usually comes from books. You know, like I'll understand the technology or the concept when I read a research article just because I'm just good at summarizing things. Mm-hmm. And then but as far as the deeper knowledge, as far as the whole, you know, the big picture around that particular like component of biology or whatnot. You get that in books, and it would be great to be able to have deeper conversations with that. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to start a book club.
So. That's a good point. It's a good idea. And I was kind of in the same boat up until last year. As part of my job, I write and edit all day. Mm-hmm. So the idea of coming home and, like, you know, diving into more words kind of turned me off for a while.
Yeah.
So I decided, you know what? I'm going to force myself. And the easiest way possible. So I bought a Kindle. And because I could take the Kindle anywhere because it's so lightweight, I just started reading books like a madman. Like in the course of, I bought it last summer. So between then and now, no, I'm sorry, the previous summer of 2015. We're in 2017 now. So in that year and a half almost, I must have gone through like 30 to 40 books in that time frame.
Are you taking the subway? Are you having time?
I take take the express bus from Staten Island to Manhattan to get to the office, and there I read. I read while, you know, waiting for friends for a beer. You know, it's always these small moments where I could get in a couple of paragraphs or pages or something.
Just like instead of going on Instagram, you read.
So I go on Instagram now more than I ever did before, so I guess this all bounces out.
I guess so. I'm like, this is a novel idea. So you read Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try that.
It's fundamental.
I know, and I bought a hard. Well, I'm going to. I have the Kindle app, so I think that's the most cost effective way. Mm-hmm. But for the really cool books, I'm gonna buy the hard copy so I can do like a giveaway and have an actual, you know,
all right,
hard book.
Giving back to the community.
Yeah, yeah, with one book instead of ordering pizza. That's usually how I weigh it out. I'm like, okay, a pizza costs this much, so I can invest in $20 in something else.
That's true. That's true. You know, I live here in New York where everything's expensive, so whenever I'm on the edge about buying something that I may really want, I'm like, okay, if I buy this for $100, that really equates to about, I don't know, like, maybe 20 beers over the course of the summer.
Exactly. So
I'll get this and then drink water, you know?
Exactly. That's how I think in terms of too. Not beer, because I don't drink beer, but I eat too much pizza. So that's like the easy one. I'm like, okay, this will prevent me from eating a pizza. So.
Yeah, I just about a few years ago, I got off my pizza kick. Like, I was in a very bad spot with eating pizza, and I had to stop this madness.
And you know, living
in New York, there were tons of great pizza shops all around, but not so much anymore. That's a whole nother conversation, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, New York City pizza is not even close to what it used to be.
Why? Because they all shut down?
That's one thing. It's expensive to run anything in New York now, so some are shutting down. The other thing is the race to the bottom. This whole thing with $1 pizza.
Oh, God. What is that, a Little Caesars pizza idea?
Mm-hmm.
$5 pizzas?
Yeah. I've tried Little Caesars. It's okay.
No, it's not.
I mean, compared to... In 2017, New York City pizza compared to the dollar stuff that's everywhere...
Oh, wow.
Little Caesars is okay now.
Wow, that's sad. That is really sad. And I've never been to New York. I need to get there before it's all over.
Yeah, there's a handful of spots that I recommend to anyone, but they'll cost you a couple of bucks. Like, and I don't mean two. I mean, like, probably if you want some good pizza, you'll spend like $5 for a slice.
Yeah, I guess that's a bit much. But what are you going to do? Consider it a delicacy.
It's something now. I don't even know what to call it. The state of pizza. So I know I'm gonna have a state of the address speech just for pizza for 2017 one day.
From New York?
Yeah. Life? My parents...
Because I just heard an accent. I was like, wait.
Yeah, I've been told I have one of the lesser New York City accents. I've been here since I was 3 years old. My father was a military man, so I was born out of state, but both my parents are from Brooklyn.
Oh, I see. That's cool. Yeah. I wish I could say that. I'm from Southern California my whole life, and that's it, pretty much.
But you have year-round great weather, though.
Yeah, we do. I'm not going to lie. I don't like to go too much into it because I don't want to make people jealous and upset. But but yeah, I live in Oceanside, which is like San Diego County. So we have better weather than like the rest of California.
Oh, so, that sounds
even
pretty good.
On those yeah, it's really good. But I'm like, don't tell anyone because I don't want anyone moving here.
I went to San Diego once, and it's a pretty nice city. Pretty nice city.
It is really nice. It's really nice. It's very San Diego. It's not like Orange County. It's not like L.A. It's just its own thing. It's not my favorite city, but I don't. But I. It's nice. It's very. It's like kind of like resort feeling, I would say, but not snotty like Orange County.
Right.
Yeah.
No, bring this back around to science. I went to San Francisco last summer, and as we were descending into San Francisco, I noticed as we were approaching the city, there were just stretches of just dry, cracked earth, and that surprised me. I remember, you know, flying over a bit more water when approaching San Francisco, and so when I landed, and I was waiting for a friend of mine in the bar. And I was talking to the bartender. He's like, yeah, we're suffering a really major drought out here. And
yeah.
And I don't know if that affects you or just the San Francisco area.
Oh, it's so sad. San Francisco is much wetter than we are down here. So, we're suffering a huge drought. Like, water is sacred. Like, water means a lot around here. And we're very grateful. We've been getting rain. This is, like, the wettest winter we've had in over 5 years where we actually have a winter, like,
right.
And where it's like the talk of the town, you're like, oh, it's going to rain again. It's going to rain tomorrow. I'm like, that's all. Everyone talks about, you know, we're a little bit happier. We're like, wow, we're going to get rain. It's still very novel and it's great. I'm still like basking in it. I'm like, it's a little overcast. It's great. We're hoping, you know, we're not going to say we're getting out of the drought, but it helps. It's just a good sign to get rain. Like, that's how bad it is, really.
Wow. So I guess there are conservation measures that they're recommended you follow?
Yeah, we do. Like, we all have, like, low water faucets and sinks and low water toilets, drought-ready, like, planting. There's fines if you water your lawn too much. Like,
okay.
We're getting serious about it. We're like, yes, we got to, because we need the water.
Right.
We're like, we need to drink water. But you mentioned something about building gizmos in shop, unless that was a typo. I'm like, I don't know what that means.
Oh, I meant shop class back in, junior high school. We go to shop class, and we were required to build some type of electronic thing. The teacher didn't care what it was. We had to build something that used electricity. And so I must have been in the 7th or 8th grade, and I built an electronic baseball game from scratch where you would pull this little lever, and it would swing forward, you know, mimicking a bat, and it would do some calculations, and then each base would light up showing how far you could run around the base. It was very, you know, very simple and rudimentary, but you know, that helped, you know, spark my love for the sciences.
That's really cool. They didn't have that when I was in school. We had shop class, but it was like woodworking and like things like that. I guess that's wood shop. So we had wood shop. Maybe we had metal shop, but I was not into science or anything or mechanical anything, so I didn't really explore it. But it's funny you say that you had that opportunity in school, because now that's like the new thing, you know, robotics class you know, they don't call it like shop, but it's like robotics, and it's like a novel idea as if this had never existed before. And the thing that's sad, why it's so novel, is because it's not in the public schools anymore. You have to actually go out of your way and like join a private, you know, club or start your own thing. It's like extracurricular.
Right.
So
that's true. Even the high school that I went to, was an experimental high school. It was designed like a college. It was almost like college prep. And, you know, we could pick our, you know, pick your own classes. And we had like hours of study time, study hall, where you just go in and like work on your own projects, whatever that was. If you wanted to build robots for 2 hours, you had to time your schedule to do that.
Cool. So you got to, it's kind of like college. Yeah.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, over the course of the years and, you know, budgetary things, those type of things have gotten stripped out of the system. And you have to go to very specialized schools now, like John Dewey or Bronx Science, to find those robotics type classes.
What do you think you could do? Are you, you're a mentor. What would you say? Wouldn't it be cool if, like, you could, like, sponsor a robotics team? Or, you know, how we have, like, everyone has, like, drill team or different, like, school activities. I think it would be great for our community and everyone if they sponsored youth programs like that. If that was more, you know, even on the front of the mind of people who don't have kids, you know?
Yeah, there are a few that a couple that I know about. The one that I actually did, I did send some bucks to, was Black Girls Code. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yes, big fan. I follow them, all that good stuff.
Yeah, they had a couple of events here in New York. I went down and I saw the kids coding stuff. It was amazing, just like dozens of kids sitting there creating games, creating apps. And they were just super passionate about it. And like, I'm glad that there's an organization like that for children, children of color, to find that place and help foster, you know, next generation of people to create these new electronic marvels. You know, whenever I go to a press event, you know, and I see the creators of these apps, very, very few look like us. And I'm hoping that, you know, in the years to come, you know, that balance will even out.
I think so. I think with more exposure, it will, because, you know, everyone has innovation. It's just directing your interest in the right direction for kids.
Right.
Like, you know, if it was just cooler, then kids would do it. If they just knew one more person in real life who did it, they would do it. Like, all these conversations I've had on the podcast so far, it always starts with, oh, just one person showed me. And it's so amazing how just one person just opened the door for, you know, everything.
That's
just
so
by
true.
The fact that it now became part of their narrative. Like, where I think we may have mentioned it earlier, where if you don't see, like, people who look like you doing things, it just doesn't, it's just not part of the story you tell yourself then, you know? Like, when I saw Hidden Figures.
Foreign.
Yeah, like when I saw Hidden Figures, you know, I knew that NASA had women who worked there that they called computers. But in my head, to be honest, a black woman never came to mind.
Right.
I just thought this generic idea of women, and I didn't think of anyone but white women, and that was my generic. Like, it didn't you, and I try to be conscious and think about outside of the box, and it just, black people just didn't even come to my mind until I saw the film, you know, and I saw it with my daughter, and now it's there. Like, I'll never forget, oh yeah, black people do that, you know?
And I guess also the time frame that that happened in, you probably wouldn't think there would be much opportunity for black people to actually have that impact on an organization like NASA. You know, we're still in the midst of, you know, civil rights movement, Jim Crow and things like that. So it is good to see that they were able to have their moment and help drive the space program forward.
Exactly. And no, it's interesting. I got a book called Black and inventors or something, African American Black inventors. I don't know the title. I'll have to look. But it's thick. And what you realize when you start learning a little history is, we've always been doing it. Mm-hmm. And in segregated environments, in different political landscapes, and mm-hmm. nothing's new under the sun. Like, we were doing things and inventing things and living life and being extraordinary, everything under mm-hmm. all circumstances, the best, the worst, freedom, no freedom. And we just think it's new every time we hear it now because, again, if you've never heard that story, never read that about, you know, that's why the narrative is so important because, right. you know, we have been doing things. We have been inventors. Women have done things. Right. All minorities have been doing it. It's just whether you've heard the story or not. And I'm glad that we're talking about it. And I'm seeing the film, and I highly recommend you see it or pay for some kid to go see it. Because
it's my list of movies to see this week. I'm going to check it out.
Yes, definitely, because it matters. I have a friend who considers himself liberal and open-minded and highly scientific and just, mm-hmm. you know, the best that he could be. Mm-hmm. And he honestly believes that science didn't start until the Greeks called it science.
That's a huge issue for several reasons.
You know, and it's all about the narrative, you know?
Yes. So. If you even take a cursory glance at world history, you know, look at South America, things are happening in Africa, things in Asia. Every people has contributed to this world, but we as a species We have almost tunnel vision about what's happening right now.
Yes, mm-hmm. I agree.
But
have to have different voices. You know,
exactly. I mean, I once did a freelance article about the history of copper, and it sounds kind of dull on the surface, but mankind and copper have been holding hands since the beginning of time, and everyone has used copper to form tools, to build counting machines, and this is around the world. Almost every culture has some form of technology. So the idea that technology is something that exists only now with our iPhones only started in Greece is completely erroneous.
I know, and it's something people believe, even the most people who think they're enlightened. You know, and I'm like, well, maybe just do a little more research with the science and history. a few Google searches, just outside of your bubble a little bit, and you will change your opinion. Because it doesn't even make sense on the scientific level. Like, really, you think with all the probability of all the minds of humanity, of all time.
Exactly.
That it only popped up at one time. In our evolutionary history, in one geographical area.
Right, and what's interesting is that
the Greeks were in a bubble, a vacuum, or something.
Right. They went to Egypt, got some knowledge, and came back home. But that's a whole different story. I was going to say there's I had an idea about.
Sorry.
That's okay. Oh, when I turned 40, I think I had a small midlife crisis. I became fascinated with the idea of death and rebirth
mm-hmm.
and how to overcome that, which kind of led me down the path of, like, you know, getting into biotech innovations, things like that. But the one thing that really hooked me is that man as a species is very resilient. We've survived lots of horrible geographic, geological events that pushed us to the brink of almost extinction. The ice age, the thawing out of the ice age, and the massive flooding that happened around the world probably shifted our population, shifted where we lived. But throughout those hellish eras of frost and rampant flooding, we were able to build things enough that we were able to survive, homes, tools. So the idea that, you know, this is only a recent event, that is not even remotely true. We've been building counting machines and agriculture technology for almost as long as we've been here.
Yep, we have. And yay, we've been doing it, and we're going to keep doing it.
Keep doing it.
And it's not segregated, you know? We're all people doing it, and we have to tell all the stories. We have to just give credit where it's due. We're all inspired by each other. You know, we're all one. We're all living on this world together. We're all together, and no one's doing it by themselves.
Nope. Nope. You know? Even if you want to say that, I'll say Apple, and this is nothing, well, nothing specifically against Apple. If you want to say Apple is like the head of consumer electronics, right?
Uh-huh.
Where are they building their products at? You have people overseas, other countries building their products. And this whole idea of potential brain drain that we send our tech overseas to be built by other people, and then those people are able to analyze what we built, build their own, and even surpass it. So we're all connected in that way. So if someone was even to say that, you know, this company or this country produces the only technology, your scope is way too small. Way too small. Look what's happening in Nigeria. Look what's happening in China. Things are rolling.
Yeah, they are. And if only we can just go ahead and recognize that this is what we should all be moving towards, a Star Trek future, once we all get on board together.
It's true.
then we can just, you know, then it's going to work out. I'm like,
that's very true. See, I'm not really a Trek fan. So I don't know if you are. Are you a Trekkie?
I am, but I'm not like hardcore. It's more like nostalgia from my childhood. You know, I watched Star Trek growing up, and I haven't really kept up with it, like the new stuff as an adult, like all the new movies. Everyone says they're fantastic. I need to like get on board. But it's like, I don't know, I'm nostalgic. You know, I like the first series, the original Star Trek. I like Next Generation. Actually, I like all the franchises, but Next Generation is my favorite. That was the closest of image of what I picture Star Trek to be. The new Star Trek is going to have a black woman lead, by the way.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. Do you watch Walking Dead?
No.
Or have you? Oh, God. Okay, it's okay.
Is it the woman with the sword?
No, it's this other character, Sasha. Her name is Sasha on the show. And she's like a key character, but she's still like a side character, but she's going to be the lead on the new Star Trek series, which is huge. I'm like, yay, it's going to be great. I'm trying to look up her real name. Where is she?
Sonequa Martin.
You're faster than me. There we go. And you said it correctly. So there we go.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, she's beautiful. And it's going to be amazing to see her in that role. I'm looking forward to it. But I could ramble forever and ever about science, but I have to let you go, unfortunately. I appreciate you letting me do that. It was so fun.
Oh, no, please. It's my pleasure. I like what you're doing, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
And you can come on anytime. I'll probably bug you like, hey, we need some more, Jeffrey Wilson on the show. So
that's all good.
And what I always do is I love is a requirement. You need to tell me the three songs that you would want to be the soundtrack to your episode right now.
Three songs would be the soundtrack to my episode. Oh wow. Oh. Oh, okay. I didn't expect that.
I know.
Do they have to be science related?
No, any song, just whatever that comes to mind in this very moment.
Whatever comes to mind in this very moment. Okay, I'll list the three songs that have been bouncing around in my head a lot recently. Prince, Raspberry Beret. Led Zeppelin, Since I've Been Loving You.
Mm-hmm.
And hard.
I know. Or if you can't know the title, but you know the course, then I can Google it and figure
it out. I know. And Golden Boys. Golden Boys by Reese, I believe her name is.
Okay, let me see.
Let me see. Golden Boys. I believe it's Golden Boys. She sang Say Hey Vision back in like the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm, I know. Oh, yeah, it's called Golden Boys. I found it.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. I'm excited. I love to go put that in. Great. And then there's one more thing. So then you will be part of the intro for the next show. So you'll say your first name, your last name, and that you're on the Dope Science Show. And you can ad-lib anything after that. So your first name, your last name, you're on the Dope Science Show. And then you can ad-lib or whatever.
Okay. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Hi, this is Jeffrey O. Wilson, senior editor at PC Magazine, and you are on the Dope Science Show. Stay tuned for some more dope science.
You rock. Thank you so much. I'm so excited. So I will be much faster than I normally am, and I'll put this out right away. So I'll edit it today and get it out in the next couple of days.
That sounds great.
Thank you so much. I will talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you. It's been fun.
It was fun. Alrighty. Bye.
Have a good day.
You too.
Man, I really love doing this show. I love sharing new stories, new conversations. Like, how did you get into science? What does science mean to you? What do you guys think about the Nintendo Switch? Are you guys going to get one? You guys should hit me up. Tell me what you think. Please rate me on iTunes. You guys haven't done it yet. I will have to start bribing you, and I'm okay with that because I appreciate everything you do. Why don't you hit me up? I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. Just look up the hashtag The Dope Science Show if you're not sure where to find me. You'll find me. And what else? I love you guys, and I will talk to you soon. Let's finish the show with Psychedelic Blues, LSD-induced magic from Led Zeppelin.
My word, my. Oh, yeah. falling. Baby, can't you see?